ඉස්කාන් සෞන්ද චාද සිරුපාචි සීසි රහා දමෝදාරකි. So I am delighted to see all of you. I've taken an interesting kind of sannyasa mudanda here. Kali Yuga Danda. I was sitting here just a few months ago. Some of you were here, and I had mentioned that when my Vyasa Puja comes out this year, that I was making a certain kind of expression, prayer, dedication to Prabhupada, to the devotees, with a certain desire to facilitate suffering in the movement. I saw different frowns on people's faces when I said that, wondering what is this all about, what does this mean, why is he saying something like this. And 5-6 months later, 25 pounds less later, operation, chagravitis, cancer, and now I'm with you again. So what is all this about? How do we process all of this? What is the beauty of all of this that we share together? Nothing different from how I've been trying to share with probably all of you since you've known me, that we've tried to talk constantly about how Krishna consciousness is an environment for community and action to prepare for ultimate community in the spiritual world. Prabhupada has so clearly explained to us that this body is preparation for something higher, due to something lower. That due to unhealthy desires, we have material bodies. And due to desires that are not quite spiritual, we will have more material bodies. And due to the transcendental system, we're actually saying every day, death to the material body, and for nourishment and for flourishing of the soul. Normally people are very active in how they can give as much sense gratification to others, and especially make sure they get as much sense gratification for themselves. Even when they give sense gratification to others, it's mainly because of what they're expecting in return. When Lord Chaitanya says in the Shashastakam prayers, I know no one but Krishna is my Lord, and even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted, he remains my worshipful Lord unconditionally. It's not that Krishna is cruel, Krishna is an autocrat, and he just wants to impose himself on those who are all under his jurisdiction, which is everything and everybody. It's not that Krishna wants people to suffer or arranges for people to suffer. It's not that Krishna creates the wars. It's not that Krishna creates the disease. It's not that Krishna creates the sin. But if he doesn't create it, who does it? Who does? If there's something that does it beyond him, then it's greater than him. Yes? No? But how do we understand that? Well, we understand, and I think a tape you heard me speak last month, is that everything that Krishna arranges is part of how he gives and receives love. There's no problem for any of us when his love comes very forward in the way that we expect it. It's very bewildering when it comes in an unexpected way, we were saying, from the side. And when it comes from the back, most people become faithless, doubtful, angry, disturbed, because they're still thinking that the Lord is supposed to do what they want, how they want, when they want. That's not the nature of love. Love doesn't do only what you expect, how you expect, It goes beyond that. It goes above that. It's real love. Somebody treats you the way that only how you expect because you've done this or done that, that's not love. At best, that's fairness. But love is beyond fairness. Love goes beyond what is comfortable for the mind and even for the body. It's not that the parent loves the child and does only those things that the child is comfortable with, wants, expects. It's not love. It's not caretaking. But the parent does so many things, arranges so many things, and many of those things at the immediate perception seem bewildering, harsh, and sometimes even insensitive and cruel for that moment. See, Shraddha, the quality of our faith determines the quality of our consciousness. I'm not talking about blind faith. The quality of our faith in Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru determines the quality of our consciousness, which determines how much we are accepting what Krishna is facilitating or providing. So basically, I said last year, a certain point, and I've been saying it for the last 3 years, but last year, for a certain point, I said, who is it, Thomas Jefferson? Somebody said, give me liberty or give me death. I said, give me the ability to be a powerful change agent on this planet and this movement. Give me the ability to minimize tremendous amount of suffering, or, well, what? Or I'm not going to play the game. So what you're seeing here is one or the other. Is Prabhupada and Krishna saying, you're not ready to play the game as we have set up, and this is the boundary, this is the situation? Okay, I'll take you out of this body to another place, or perhaps back. Or Krishna and Prabhupada is saying, so you've asked like that, you'll be a major element in this society and help to minimize suffering of devotees who are trying to dedicate themselves, who are becoming so confused, who are so faithless at times, who are so much having different stagnations that distract them, that we're going to do it, but not in the way that you expect. So I see either way as an answer to my prayer. I see if Krishna decides that I go, which every day is a roller coaster, there's nothing certain about my staying or going, it's all up in the air. The doctors in Mexico, one of the doctors who's treating me said he's never seen such a concentration of melanoma cancer, such a large concentration in his 25 years dealing with cancer. Before I left, the doctor said in Washington, Center Hospital, if I didn't do anything, I had six months to live. You heard what I said. Thank you. That's a long time. That gives me 6 months to turn this thing totally around, or 6 months to prepare my consciousness for leaving. 6 months is a lot of days, a lot of hours for preparation. See, I've been trying to understand, and I write about it and speak about it, but I don't understand it yet. I thought one of the, they posted some weeks back on Deepika, one of my beggars, where I'm talking about compassion, was saying about the idea of one being willing to sacrifice, or being willing to give their credits to others, being willing to forego their own liberation, being willing to take on others different types of suffering. I give different categories. As I've been trying to understand better, that the deep love is not about one's own convenience. Even though I have a lot of particular things of how I like to do and what I like to control and how I like to organize and what I like to experience. Of course, that's personality also. But year after year, I try to understand more, what does it mean to really to love people? We know what lust means. We know that word is thrown around and peck. It doesn't mean anything. But I'm gradually beginning to understand, I think, it a little better. And I realize that it really means putting yourself out of the center and being so much genuinely concerned about another's well-being. It doesn't mean that one necessarily does that spontaneously. That is a very mature state. It doesn't mean that one does that totally free of grudge. That's a very mature state. It's not that every time the parent does something that's for the benefit of the child, that is done just spontaneously. Sometimes it's done out of stress and duress. But at the same time, they're eager to do it, and they're happy that they have done it. So I'm kind of in that space. Not that I'm not going through a certain amount of physical and emotional anxiety. I've always been a free spirit, full of passion, and full of a certain amount of creativity. And have to have spent the last 3 months basically on my butt with my foot raised up in the air, and major movement was going around the room, at least the first month and a half, just hopping on a pair of crutches. It was not my conception of a preacher or my conception of service. But what it was a conception is a greater realization that one was never in control. There's times when we think that we are somewhat in control. Can't think it too much because we can't stop ourselves from going to the bathroom. But still, the illusion of control is quite awesome. Now, I haven't changed so much. I'm just as arrogant as I've ever been. I'm even more arrogant now. Even that prayer is arrogant. That prayer is arrogant. Who am I to say to my guru and to Krishna, look, I want 100% purity and I want to be a powerful change agent now. Because I can't remain doing this kind of service on this planet and see people suffering the way they're suffering and not being able to do something more significant to change it. Who am I to make such a prayer? But at the same time, if Krishna has no favors, he doesn't want to see the suffering. He has full ability to make changes if we somehow move aside and let him. Then who am I not, or who any of us are not, to want to be used in a certain way? Now, my situation is so auspicious. You may say, how? Tumor, cancer, sugar diabetes, advanced cancer, high blood pressure. You may say, how? I was telling one couple of God brothers, there's a certain comfort in knowing that you're going to die. You should prepare for that. There's a certain comfort in knowing that you're staying. You prepare for that. There's a lot of dissonance in not knowing whether you're going to go or stay. You don't know what to prepare for. And that's kind of the situation Krishna has me in. It's up to Prabhupada who makes the final decision. But it makes it difficult trying to shift in planning and in focusing. I was telling Chandramani Swami, I had all these tickets around the world for going all these places. I had taken 2 months here, very much in seclusion. Had a whole suitcase full of workshops and seminars that I was going to do in Ireland and England, in Ukraine, in Croatia, and Russia, and Belarus, so many different places. And I said, but in these 2 months, 3 months of trying to recover, Krishna's arranged that I'm doing more preaching in those places than if I physically had gone. Devotees all around the world have my picture on the altars like I'm going to die tomorrow. They're making 24-hour kirtans, yajnas, Harinams, Nama Yajnas, Srinidhe Puja, and Mayapur, and Dhamma, so many places. I said to Bhakti Chumash, hey, I have to leave now. Because this is such an auspicious time. I mean, I never get this opportunity again. So I think maybe it's best that I leave now. And then I told him later, I said, you know, either way it's auspicious. I said, if I leave now, it's wonderful. Because how Krishna's given me a chance to focus a little bit. And those who can focus even more than me are praying for me. You know, at one point we had to stop with phone calls first month because I was getting phone calls about every 15 minutes from God, but then God sisters all over the world. And I mean in all the different groups. Sura Maharaj group, Narayan Maharaj group, ISKCON, Greater ISKCON, Further ISKCON, Near ISKCON. That was amazing. Some devotees I haven't heard from in 20 years. And they were calling me and they were crying. You know, I have heard her from them in 10, 15 years. And they were calling and crying and saying, stay, and we just want to open up with what we feel about you and go back this time, that time. Amazing. And it was some amazing, amazing, amazing spectrum of people I who never thought would have called or wrote in such ways. And so I thought, well, all of this happening, I must be leaving because this is too much. This is too much. And then I was talking about Chimaj, and if I don't go, you guys watch out. I said, do you know the realizations you get thinking you're going to die every day? Huh? I mean, the cancer can jump anywhere, any day. The medications on the medication can overreact. It can kill you. I mean, it's just like one thing after another. The first day I arrived just a couple of days ago from Mexico, I had to go to emergency. Because this thing that I'm having, somehow my blood got backed up and it was stuck and I couldn't use it. And so therefore, we were trying and trying and I had a blood clot. So we were calling about what to do and they were saying, well, if it's too much of a clot, you try to push it and go to the heart and have a problem, it can kill you. I thought, what's this? The medicine can kill you. The health can kill you. Cancer can kill you. So, well, this is the reality, though, isn't it? It's that we are normally thinking that we are really going to be in these bodies for a long time. Or we're thinking that the body is much more durable than what it really is. And then I was laughing, and Tony, I was thinking, I could become free of all this cancer and all this stupid diabetes and all this stuff and then slip on a banana and have a concussion. You know, when you have to go, you have to go. If you don't, then whatever, you know, it won't happen in such a way. Now, the auspicious side is if I stay, then it seems Krishna's giving me lots of realizations and my heart is opening up and in some ways I'm opening some of ISKCON devotees' hearts. And so if I stay, then maybe I can do more of that. You know, maybe Krishna will allow me to be able to help others to have greater faith, help people to understand how to move blocks a little better than I've dabbled and tried, and to help me to be more here, you know, but not here, in essence. All the things that we often think about in structure, when time of death comes, or when it comes near, most of those things don't mean anything anymore, or don't mean as much. Then we get a chance to see what really is important in our lives. And what is, of course, most important is the relationship. Most important is the relationship we have with Krishna and Guru. And that has an effect on what we have towards sadhu. And none of us know how much we're really Krishna conscious until we actually really confront it with the deep, deep Krishna conscious experience. That forces us to put us on an unconditional platform. To what degree are we really ready to honor that, accept that? It's not so easy. It's easy for me to think, and one part of me to think, what is this? Basically, all my life I've been a very strict brahmachari. Whatever has come to me has come to me in spite of whatever's going on. Krishna has allowed me many opportunities, and now I get a chance in my life that I can probably do more in service, and now I'm out of service. Here I'm praying to my guru to help, and now he's made me like an invalid. I just think, hey, what kind of guru are you? What kind of movement is this? What kind of philosophy is this? Huh? What kind of God are you? I pray to you to help others, and you make me more helpless. He said, I could, before go around and do a song and dance. Huh? Be people a little stirred up about something for a little while, even if it was just a moment. Can you imagine what it's like now? Even before, when I had the problem with the prostate, and I was going around different countries in a wheelchair. Some devotees had no idea that I was in that shape, and they're expecting me to come. And like once or twice, they had even organized, you know, a Maha Harinam that evening. They come to the airport, they're going to jump in the car and go with them, and they come, and I got Mwebo now in the wheelchair. And they're thinking, what? What's going on? I say, well, here I am. But it was, you know, it was a little shocking in that sense. But it was a good orientation for walking around on crutches. But this time, crutches weren't so overwhelming, actually. So, what we're really saying that through all of this is this Krishna consciousness is extremely powerful. And it's designed to get us out of the body conception. It's designed to get us out of prison once and for all. It's designed to call us, to push us, and to force us back to the spiritual world. We are cursed if we're too comfortable here. We're cursed if we're too satisfied. We're cursed if we're just spending most of our life thinking about ourselves. We're cursed because we remain residents of this material world. And until we can be able to literally to feel someone else's happiness and feel someone else's pain, there's no question of entering into Raj, because everyone is a aspect of Radha and Krishna. And so therefore, because they're an aspect of Radha and Krishna, they have similar potencies and they have similar feelings. There cannot be an aspect, such an integral aspect of Radha and Krishna, and be in such a different emotional state. Cannot reside in the spiritual world in that particular way. So that deep state is the selflessness. That is even why Krishna himself comes as Lord Chaitanya, and trying to catch up with that degree of selfishness that is coming from Radharani, that is coming from those intimate associates who are associating with them. So to experience that in full becomes in that mood of a devotee who is now having the full experience, the subject and the object. So every single devotee will have to be tested in ways to prepare you for going back to the spiritual world. Every single devotee will have to be challenged on, are you doing for Krishna or are you doing for yourself? Are you still caught up with Dharma and not really embracing Sanatana Dharma? In Dharma, we know that there is a God, and we know there's ethics, we know there's morality. We know that there's things to avoid and things to do. But we're still so much the center of what goes on. Yes, we have our individuality, and we have to use what we have, and that's when we're giving it back to Krishna. But to what degree are we giving it back to Krishna? If my desire genuinely was to serve, if Krishna says, I want you to serve by being an invalid, then I'm to be grateful, because it means the service has been accepted on that level. Krishna says, I want you to serve by traveling all around, giving courses, giving kirtans and harinams, then that's okay, that's what Krishna wants. Krishna says, I want you to serve, I want you to go to Pritaloka, then that's also okay, isn't it? Krishna says, I want you to serve, I want you to go to somewhere else, another universe. I want you to go and be with your guru. I want you to go back to the spiritual world. either situation, there should be as much gratitude as another situation. And where not, then there is too much absorption or pervasiveness of false ego. So, Sivaram Swami was saying, my situation is like a soap opera. And I wrote later, I think it's like a roller coaster. Soap opera because it's uncertain how it's going to unfold. A roller coaster because it's like a, it's fast, it's moving. And it goes up and it takes your breath. So I don't know if I'm going to be around here for 2 or 3 more months. I don't know if this is Krishna saying, yes, I accept your prayer, and this is the way I'm going to get your consciousness focused. And then when I do take you away, you have more time for that to be focused. Whether he allows me to stay to do more. But some of those, or one of those, is happening. Especially if I leave with so many prayers and blessings. And as I said, I'm 54, almost 55 years old, and I feel Krishna has blessed me to do anything I wanted to do materially and spiritually. I've done, basically. I've done everything I want to do except become 100% pure. I have nothing else that I desire. Nothing else I have to do. I've met many celebrities. I've met kings. I've met presidents of countries. I'm on TV all over. My face is pasted all over the country. Australia, Russia, Mexico, you name it. I've been on national TV in these places preaching to thousands, tens of thousands of people. My books will go on and on and on for quite some time. After I'm gone, people will realize even more some interesting things I've said in the books, because so many of my own, maybe one of my books, if I've actually written, most of my books have come out mystically in spite of me, and I know it because I know what I can't do. I know the way some of these books have come together has been far beyond me. Not even written to be books. Now, Krishna is saying, okay, you're complaining, and so you don't want to continue as the situation is. The situation is not going to change, and so therefore, go somewhere else, do something different. That might be the case also. The time factor will tell. But categorical is that I have already left my body. You can't for 3 months be thinking about death and not have a major subtle body shift. And if there's any little bit of spirituality, then there's a certain kind of reciprocation that comes along with that. So now, how long do I stay in the physical body? That you all see, and I'll see also. My life has already changed. The fact that I'm a diabetic now, everything has already changed. But the cancer, even if we get rid of the cancer in a year, cancer is like a demon. It can come back anytime. So certain things have to change. We saw so many people who've had cancer 3 or 4 times. It's like a special Kali Yuga demon. It just pervades into the body in such ways. I mean, if you didn't see all of this, I don't look sick. I don't think I look sick. My sugar is probably very high. This thing taking on with 300, almost near coma. I don't look so sick. I'm a little gray from the chemo. A little grayish looking sometimes. Lost 25 pounds. But Haribo, can write a book, how to lose 5 pounds a week, every 2 weeks. But I want to thank all of you, because I think in your day-to-day services, your day-to-day Krishna consciousness, that everyone has their own challenges to deal with and to unfold. And Krishna consciousness, it is. It's actually, it's very heavy. Because It's full of surprises. And Krishna definitely fulfills his name is Atmaram, self-sufficient, and Kinchana. He definitely is inconceivable. And it's hard trying to be Krishna conscious. The majority of people around you are not very Krishna conscious. Doesn't matter what temple, what diatra, what place you go, the majority of people are not very Krishna conscious. Nor the majority of us really want to be that Krishna conscious. We want to be Krishna conscious, we can easily say, whatever Krishna does to you, when, how he wants, it's okay. Any of you who can't say that immediately, right away, with enthusiasm, then it means this. There's a lot of the false ego that's there. You can see that. We basically can't say that very easily. We basically can't say, whatever is most important to you, Krishna takes that away, and you'll be okay. Whoever is most important to you, Krishna takes that person away, and you'll be okay. It's not so easy to say that. Think of whatever is most important to you. It doesn't matter what it is. Whatever you're most attached to, a person, an idea, situation, whatever, Krishna takes that away. And you have resolve, quick resolve. The grunt, the bounce back. That's so easy. It's like it's not so easy to give somebody something that's dear to you. It's easy to give somebody something that you don't want, that you don't need. It's not easy to give somebody something that you want. It's not so easy for me to have all the things that I basically like to do taken away and to still be as enthusiastic. It's a struggle. But it's a struggle the biggest part of me is excited at her with. Although the physical me has to go through a whole cultural, it's almost like you're learning a new culture, a new language. You know, you may be enthusiastic to learn a new language, but it's a new language. It's a new way of how to speak and how to think. And so it's excruciating in the process of learning that new language. I'm trying to learn a new language as I see and interact and do some things similar, but many things different. Most important, in a different consciousness. I mean, I'm intoxicated. I mean, can you imagine just nearly thousands of devotees praying for me and sending their love? You know how powerful prayers are? You can imagine the major part of me is just intoxicated with affection and love and power. Awesome. When devotees are making such prayers. And then another side says, wow, how kind Prabhupada is for giving me this special treatment. And another side says, but are you, or those who are praying for me, really ready for me to stay around? Because if I stay around, I may be five times more obnoxious than I've ever been. Because I have come from the dead. I don't know. I'm pretty obnoxious already. So I don't know. I don't know whether Prabhupada will even let me stay around. If he keeps with the realization he gave me, I don't know whether he will let me stay around. Because already some things I do is so disturbing to some people that they think Krishna consciousness doesn't work. And when somebody expresses some aspect of it, they become bewildered and they think sahajiya. Already. Maybe Prabhupada is taking me away because of that aspect. Don't be understood. There's many questions that are there. But my excitement is that the prayer was put out and Krishna is more kind than what we can understand. I have taken a very low birth Therefore, I stand in front of the line for mercy. You look at my birth, look at my heritage, from being born in a ghetto, associating with pimps and hookers, doing some of this stuff myself for drugs, and living in an environment completely full of degradation. Living on welfare most of my life as a child. And becoming a Vaishnava guru. Lord Ajahnanda's mercy is especially prominent in this age. So, is it unusual for Krishna to give me some special mercy? No more than Prabhupada once in Mayapur during the festival called all the leaders in and says, all of you pray for Ghanasham. As in communist country, and trying to sell Prabhupada sex, and there was challenges. Prabhupada called all the leaders in and says, so you pray for this boy Ghanasham. Dabhataka Fyodor says, Prabhupada, you're the pure devotee. Your blessings, your prayers is enough. Prabhupada says, no. Prabhupada says, Krishna responds to the devotees you offer it. So the same Prabhupada who physically was here saw such a lowly, unfortunate guy as me who only could be helped by such collective prayers is doing the exact same thing now. And if my prayers is accepted, then I will use that and I will turn it back to help many people who are stuck and suffering. So that is my prayer, that Krishna allows that. If he doesn't, then I will accept however he arranges for that prayer to be answered. Where I would like it to be answered is that now I've been put in this situation where I can understand suffering more, put in a situation where I can reach people's hearts at a certain level, put in a situation where certain things are being focused on me. Now if I can use that, because that was the prayer. The prayer was, in order to be that kind of change agent, it meant that whatever I would have to experience, let it come, knowing that would purify me and allow me to be put into a position to be able to help better. The Buddhists have this more articulated, in some ways even more than the Vaishnavas, on a day-to-day basis. The basic platform of Buddhism, of really, really becoming a Buddha, is the point of that in order to help the suffering of the people, one has to become elevated so they can really be able to help. All of any true practitioners rare these days, but a true practitioner of Buddhism is not concerned with his or her liberation, but the understanding in order to take on this, to remove or eliminate or minimize the sufferings of the world for all species, all human beings, that one is to become elevated to be able to be an embassy of compassion for this to happen. So in Buddhist rituals, this is like a daily kind of meditation. How much people accept it and internalize it, that's another thing. Our situation is extremely advanced, and that's the problem. We're so advanced that we are Krishna, but to the point sometimes it's Kanishka. That we're so much Krishna that it becomes Kanishka, and that we think about Krishna and the hell with everybody else. So it's not really Krishna. It's a superficial involvement in the thought of Krishna, because if we're really thinking of Krishna, then we're seeing Krishna in everyone. But so often devotees even play down compassion and just say it's people's karma because they don't want to go there. They don't want to think about that this world and its body is suffering. And we have to get out of the suffering. So the idea is to think of Krishna and think of his wonderful, wonderful leelas and to think of oneself in that situation. How much when we think of his leelas do we think of others being there with us or in spite of us? That's another form of moksha. Think of myself in Vrindavan. But what about everybody else? This is a little bit above just thinking about one's own nirvana or samadhi. We can't help others if we don't have sufficiently the power or the shakti or the love or the compassion to do it. But there is a price for everything. That's just the nature of spiritual as well as a mature paradigm. But in mature speaking, the price we pay is usually more than what we get. That's what it's worth. This is a little price to pay. You say, well, if I had to leave at 54, 55 years old, it's a little price to pay for all the blessings of Vaishnava. But somehow or other, we're going to reach out. If you even leave the body, you're still going to reach out and try to help. I'm sure Krishna will arrange that. And it is what happens to every one of us. However we have to go, that's between you and Krishna. But each of us, we're going to go a certain way. It's not going to be long. It may not be through cancer, it may not be through some kind of chronic disease, but every one of us is going to go. What is that person leaving impact upon us? And what do our leaving impact upon the community? And what do our leaving have to do with, you know, bringing closure, you know, to our existence? So in summary, this is like the most complicated time of my life, and it's the most auspicious time of my life. Interesting contradiction. It's the most complicated because I have no way to plan, to know what to plan for. And one reality is just as possible as another. And it's most auspicious because I am more dependent on Krishna's mercy than ever in my entire existence in this physical body. Rupa Goswami explains the importance of depending on Krishna. It is the Swarup Lakshana. It is the major arm, the major tenet of bhakti. Dependency on Krishna. So that means Krishna has favored me by putting me in such an obvious dependent state. So therefore, it becomes most auspicious. So our plans is to be here for a few days or maybe a week. I need to stick with a very rigid protocol for maybe the next 3 or 6 months to see if there is chance to be freed of some of the cancer. At this time, we have permanently or temporarily stop the cancer seemingly from accelerating. Now the next thing is to see how to begin to eliminate it. If elimination is there, then to see how to keep it from, you know, from coming back. Isn't that wonderful? I mean, it's like constantly being on the edge, which is a blessing in its own way in disguise. And so I will be working in the next month or two. I'll probably go to Hawaii. Looks like we're going to go to Hawaii in a couple of days. Dasarath, one of my godbrothers, has offered his house there. He and others are forcing me in the sense that, knowing that if I'm in any other place, I'll be too likely to get into some other kind of, you know, usual routine. I'm 8 hours, about or so, on different kinds of drips during the day. Take lots of medication, I'm on different kinds of machines. You come in at a certain time, you see no different kind of machines, don't be so shocked. So practically the whole day is just either building up the immune system or fighting the cancer. Pretty boring, huh? So I need to do that for some time, some months. Otherwise we have the opposite happens. We like attack the cancer, and if we get off, then the cancer comes back stronger, you know, greater immunity. And that gives us a chance to see what's going on also. Now after that, when I come back, either 1 month from now, or 3 months from now, or 2 months from now, I don't know. I don't know exactly what my lifestyle will be like, or what I will be doing. Prabhupada feels it best for me in his service to all of you and to his mission
to let that take place. I'm not taking back my prayer. I'm not praying to stay. Nor am I praying to go. But I'm praying that however this unfolds the way that is best to unfold, that will allow me to develop that 100% level of purity, to not to, for my own edification or realization, but for ability to be able to have more permanent effect in helping to change people, to help them with their struggle, then whatever, it's okay. Krishna hears all the prayers, so no prayer goes unheard of. I feel that we do have a duty from time to time to try to give back. Every devotee has been given so much. If you compare a devotee, what we've experienced, what we know, in contrast to other people who may have struggled less, even less than we are, but still, the greatest struggling is struggling and not know why. Even if you're devoting, you're going through whatever, at least you have knowledge. And that's something that's very powerful. The greatest is to be in states of bewilderment, confusion, and pain, and not to know why. Not to know how to get out of it. We know why, and we know also how to get out of it. And we have the tools. So we have constant attacks and duty somehow to try to offer that back in some way. So when you think of me or when you see me in these states, let it be more of a way of you thinking about yourself. It'll be more of a reflection for you. What stuff you got to work on fast to clean up in your life. Let it be a reflection on you. How much in your own day-to-day activities are you thinking about others' well-being? And what you're preparing, how much of that is based on your plan, your convenience, your comfort? How much of that is based on becoming a greater facilitator? To be able to serve others. And that's not denying our own individuality. It's not trying to become something bigger than what we are. That day when we were here, and I shared that prayer with some of you, a couple of people's minds was like, who in the hell does he think he is? He's Vasudeva Dada or something? You know? I'm a very sensitive person. I pick up stuff. And I thought, but who is Vasudeva Dada? He's also an agent of Krishna, just like every one of you and every one of us are. It's not that these great personalities is just some figment of the imagination. They are beings who have interacted in this world, who are pure like all of us. It's just a matter of degree of how much we are covered over or accept the covering. I have been writing over 20 years in my diaries, please, let today is my last day. Please, let me encounter whatever is necessary. Please, let me take on suffering so that others can be free. It's a nothing new that we are seeing. Now, even if we don't mean it, we keep saying something again and again and again. Hopefully it takes on a deeper quality. Do I mean it 100%? No way. Do I want to mean it 100%? I hope so. Will Krishna accept it to a certain degree? Yes. Will he accept it greater than my actual quality? Yes. So if I put it out, even if I don't have that quality, Krishna will accept it to a greater degree than my actual quality. So when you look at me like this, you think, Maharaj wants to help me. And therefore, he's ready to take on some extra to help me. It's the only major thing that this should mean to you. Don't have some pity for me. Don't have this for me. You think that Maharaj wants to help me and he wants to help others. Even though he's unqualified and unready for it, he wants to help. So let it be a reflection with you. It's about helping. So you try to help yourself, you try to help someone else. And then whatever happens around us, whatever happens to us, it is glorious. Because we said, okay, Krishna is yours. Prabhupada's prayer when he came on the boat, so you brought me to this wretched place for some reason. Now you make me dance. So let us watch how this unfolds, but more than my own case, watch how it unfolds in your own life. Hopefully this will help you to take Krishna consciousness and be more real. It will help you to realize so many things that I've said week after week, month after month, that hopefully it wasn't just hype. Because if it was hype, I think at this point I've been broke down. In a week's time, whatever I experienced in 1 week's time was awesome. It was enough to make somebody blaspheme. And the fact that I'm accepting this, it ain't easy, but I'm accepting it with enthusiasm, is a sign of Prabhupada's grace. Because it's beyond my own individual strength. I don't like pain. I don't like sickness at all. Some people deal with sickness easily, huh? Pain. A lot of people have been sick most of their life. You know, you kind of get immune to it. You can deal with it a little better. Some people who are basically quite healthy and all of a sudden. My little prostate operation, you know, so overwhelming for me. But that's also something I look back at every day and I think, Krishna, how kind you were that for most of my life, you've allowed me to be quite healthy. And so I thank you for that. So we will know, I guess, maybe in a day or so, or 2 days, Anasuya is trying to help us you know, with our tickets. Ekavir and Vadalila have been extremely mindful. Ekavir is like my doctor. He's just giving me different regimes every day of arranging things. My leader's been cooking and helping with the email and so many things. So it's like Krishna freed them at a very interesting time also. Because, you know, to be honest, I told Ekavir the other day, and I told Raja Lila, I think, if Ekavir wasn't doing what he was doing, I wouldn't want to stay here because I wouldn't, you know, like even now, I don't even think most of the time about the medication and stuff. I just can't go there. If I had to do all of my drips, all the medication, do all of this, do all the stuff that I'm supposed to do on my own, I would just ask Prabhupada, take me away. I don't want to, what is life? Just thinking about my body all day long. It's bad enough having somebody else think about it. I got to plug into it. But I wouldn't want to stay because it would be too much. I would think it would be too much. Be having to meditate on me 24 hours a day. It's overwhelming already. I was just praying, and it's taken me away, and I think Prabhupada would. But I may be staying, you know, a good chance. And let's see how that unfolds. How much it allows me to have more potency to help you and devotees around the world. See, some of you heard that tape. And I'll end with this because it's late. And I got other stuff to do all during the night. When there's great problems, great conflicts, that means Maya is very strong. But when Maya is very strong, that means also Krishna's presence, you know, is very much needed. So remember that I think some of you, the tape was brought from the lecture I gave in IFAS, is that I saw this. You know, I'm a utilitarian, I'm an opportunist. Those of you who know me well, you know I always do many things at the same time. And so I saw that because there is so much confusion. Now keep in mind, as I travel, I'm a lot in the secular world. I'm with the business community, interfaith community, the medical community, other religions, and then with the Krishna consciousness of devotees. So I've seen all these problems all across the board. It doesn't matter whose organization. And as we're all hearing from the news about the crime and about the ecological changes, you realize, hey, some very heavy things are going on this planet. Very unnatural things. Now that to me is a cry, or it's a door. That to me says, so many bad things are happening, so there is a door that can allow so many good things to happen. And so for me, this was a strong clarion call that a door is opening for good things to happen. And my feeling was, hey, I'm going to go to the head of that door. Because the need is so great. I don't know what it takes to get to that door, how to get to that door, but I know those who do know, and therefore I want to place my case at their lotus feet and say, a need is there, now bring me to that door to facilitate others. So those last two sentences kind of summarize, you know, my state of consciousness at this point, or what I'm trying to develop. And maybe with more prayers, I'll be able to develop that. I don't want to ride second class as a spiritualist any longer. It's unfair. Unfair for my service to my guru, for me to be a second class devotee. It's unfair for you, who I'm your GBC, or your guru, or shiksha, or diksha, or just your godbrother, or just your uncle. It's unfair. Because whatever I bring into the environment is what you also experience in any association. Whatever any of us bring. So that was my prayer and my mood. Make me first class in the physical, or take me away and make me first class in the spiritual. And whatever is necessary, okay, I'm ready for it. I may scream, I may kick, I may cry, but do it anyway. So I will be praying to Radha Damodar in the same way, that somehow we can all be able to see better ways how to serve them, and to really be reminded that it ain't about ritual, it ain't about yajnas, it ain't about scholarship, it ain't even about past credits. It's about the moment of Krishna consciousness. It's about how much we really accept that Krishna is our well-wisher, in spite of. How much we fall into the loving embrace and influence of Radha and Krishna. Where we are there, divine slaves. Not mindless, but fully mindful, for the mind is fully full with Krishna Katha. So let us see what Prabhupada's plan is. Am I the rascal? And my guru is calling me back? Or am I a special fallen agent getting special mercy of my guru day? I want to be around to see which one it is. Any questions? Any comments? Good. We'll just take a few and then I'll let you go.
Krishna, you were saying that once when you were preaching in the communist countries and you encountered a problem, Srila Prabhupada told the devotees to pray for you. And I hope when they prayed, Krishna answered their prayer. You also prayed to Srila Prabhupada, and we've seen the prayer being answered. So how come that there are so many devotees also praying to Krishna, and it appears Krishna is not answering. Because many devotees are praying to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna that you stay at least for a while. And it appears the prayers is not answered. How come?
Because as Vaishnavas, even when we make some specific prayer, that deeper than that is whatever is Krishna's will. So it speeds up Krishna's will. And even when we make prayers for someone, that person has their own individual karma, potency, prayer, and will. So even with devotees praying that I stay, my consciousness is whatever Krishna wants. That pervades more than staying if it's not what Krishna wants. Their prayers will be answered in the sense that what is best will happen. That's the difference. They're just praying that, okay, this particular thing happens in this particular way. And if I'm praying like that also, then of course that will probably be the final result, whatever that is. Doesn't mean it's the best. Somebody may pray for a car, and they may get that car through the agencies of the demigods, in most cases. But when we are connected with the parampara, then we are somewhat foolish to want something to happen that's not for the best interest in our service to Krishna. But still, those are loving prayers. And those prayers are based on the fact that when one would think, well, it's best if our guru or our godbrother or our uncle, it's best if devotees stay. You know, like a few of the senior gurus were calling me, and they were crying. I'm just amazed. I mean, people's hearts opening up, and I'm just overwhelmed. And they were calling, they were crying, they were saying, we can't understand why Krishna will be taking him away. You know, so many other leaders and so many other visionaries at this time. It doesn't seem right. And I said, you know, Krishna has his own plan. And Prabhupada is much bigger than only his work here on this particular planet. And if it's Prabhupada's desire that some of his servants join him in some other place, then who are we or any of us to ought to have a problem with that? I mean, we were fully aware and ready for Tamal Krishna Maharaj to finish his few months with his dissertation, to set up an academy, you know, in Mayapur. He had become so much more aware of so many things from his involvement those years that he's going to make a major impact on the whole movement. And just as he's ready to go back and start doing that, he gets taken away. Now, it wasn't that the assembly of devotees were expecting that or praying, or would have prayed for him to go. But because he was especially under Prabhupada's care, then Prabhupada had another plan for him. He's having influence still on this movement, no question of that. And several of those who Prabhupada has taken away, men as well as women, have a very special impact. And they are, in some cases, more impacting on the movement now than they did when they were physically around.
Okay. Thank you, Maharaj. I was really trying to absorb everything you were saying. I think I heard so much. At the same time, I understood maybe a small portion of what you're saying, because I know a lot of things you're saying is due to your realizations, which we don't have, but at the same time we hear these philosophically, but to get the end, the realization, it's a whole different thing. But based on this devotee's question, when Prabhupada was sick and he was about to seemed like he was leaving the planet. The devotees were also feeling the great anxiety and love for Prabhupada to stay, and Prabhupada very strongly, and as you are doing, instructed the same thing, that don't pray for me to stay directly to Krishna, but pray to Krishna that whatever Krishna's desire is, that's what we want. But there's another thing beyond that actually is that we can actually pray for that desire for them to stay by actually living for why they're here. And that is more or less becoming more and more serious and more Krishna conscious. That's an indication to Srila Prabhupada and to Krishna that actually we want them here. If we remain neophyte, then really we're not really taking advantage of their presence. So that's the real prayer. And that's what Prabhupada taught us, and I think that's what Maharaj is also being put in that position also. The real prayers are actually our own Krishna conscious, our own serious, how much we're willing to take the next step forward in order to surrender more to Krishna. So we should pray the other way also, but at the same time, the real prayer is that what is the purpose of the spiritual master is to make us Krishna conscious. And if we don't do that, and really, his presence really doesn't have that much importance. And then, in the other way, if we actually are making advancement, then actually we're really appreciating his presence and his words. That's the real expression of our love.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thanks. Good having you back today. I hope that you'd be with us physically for time. But I also hope that we as disciples can live up to your expectation in our development.
And what if you don't, I will come back and haunt you. I'll beat you in the head every night. I can't sleep.
And I know for myself, graduating from high school in 60 in thought that was a big advancement, and then coming into Krishna consciousness in 90. Now this is 2004. Seems like you in life you're always graduating, and Still, we got so far to go, even in this senior body, I still have still so much further to advance in getting rid of so many attachments, and some attachments. Some vices I'm attached to, and I know I have them, so those I should try to get rid of first. I keep saying I'm going to be get more into the books, because so much in them that realizations so many things are said, but still to get the realizations out of them don't come as quickly as we read and as we hear. Things I've been in over and over, and then later sometimes the realization really comes out.
One of the realizations I'm getting through this whole experience is how we do have to do our really best, but it's never enough. And that's the mercy factor that we want. Is that we never want to feel that it's fully, even mostly, in our control to become Krishna conscious. It's in our control to want to become Krishna conscious so genuinely that Krishna and first class sadhus, they arrange for it. It's not to make us feel pessimistic or existential or cynical, but it's never enough that the individual entity can do, conditioned soul can do, and become Krishna conscious. They can have a strong enough desire that Krishna will remove the Maya. So we don't just wait for it to be removed, nor do we think that it's in our grasp, to fully remove it. But we have that eagerness to develop that strong enough desire where we get this additional help. So it's good that you are thinking this way. That means your desire is increasing. And Krishna will respond to our desires. Yes, there's someone around the corner there. See, when we think too much that we're controlling, we get too disappointed by our failures, we get too elevated or excited, that is, by our successes, and we're just around the corner from a bigger failure. But once we know the danger is there, and at the same time we're accelerating and trying, having a big desire, then Krishna will help us to avoid the pitfalls.
There's so many things happening to us in our day-to-day lives that changes our way of life. But something I'm wondering is that how do we know that it's Krishna's arrangement?
We don't. We don't know whether it's some blessings of the past karma, whether it's some chastisement from past karma, whether it's something that is due to some immediate actions and reaction has come to us, or we don't know whether it's extreme grace. So why bother? In other words, we accept it all as Krishna's grace, Krishna's mercy, it'll become that. Doesn't mean we don't do anything. We do our best and accept it as Krishna's mercy, Krishna's grace. Krishna's mercy and grace that we have to struggle to put this together. Krishna's mercy and grace that we become famous, become infamous. Krishna's mercy and grace that we get good health, we get sickness. And take it as Krishna's mercy and grace and it'll turn into that while we do whatever we think is necessary to bring about a greater Krishna conscious effect. You get that extreme. You get people who say, well, it's Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy. Especially when it happens to somebody else. Krishna's mercy, well, Krishna's mercy. And then it happens to them. But it is Krishna's mercy. It happens to the other person, it happens to them also. But that mercy is qualified as well. Mercy can come in the form of a chastisement, but it's mercy still. If we're serving, we're trying to be the servant of the servant, then we want constantly to have various types of feedback. And whatever feedback that we are receiving, we want somehow to use it to become a better devotee. Now, feedback is coming, but also we codify it in a certain way. We may not always codify it the way it is given or the way it is intended, or maybe so, maybe not. But feedback is what a devotee definitely wants. And a devotee definitely wants to consider those who are giving feedback are our prabhus. So if someone is giving some feedback, then we should be asking them on a regular basis, how can I serve better? And not just articulate it and let it go out the other ear, but asking specifically, how can I serve better? I'm trying to see how to serve better. We make Krishna consciousness so damn complicated, Jimmy. When the time of death approaches us or comes, we definitely realize it really isn't that complicated. That Krishna brings us into different associations for a very specific reason that's beneficial. Now, how we take advantage of that is up to each person. But whoever comes into our life space, there's some reason, some beneficial reason for it. We can keep looking outside and thinking that it's somebody else's problem. We can keep thinking people don't like us, people don't trust us, people don't need us. Maybe that is the case. Then let's function in a way that people will definitely show that they need us to the point that we feel we're more comfortable. Let us function in a way that people will feel inspired by what we do and how we do it. The whole theme again, we want service, we want liberation, we want acceleration, we want purity, so we can serve others better. And what do we do in the meantime? We try to serve others better, even now. Anyone else? Just take, you know, we read Bhagavatam. Preacher Maharaj is going to die in 7 days. Just think, if any of us are going to die in 7 days, what would be now important in our life? And you use that as a platform. You consider so many things that we may be overwhelmed with. It's really not that significant to be so overwhelmed.
After I waited a while, I was thinking maybe I shouldn't say anything because...
Please.
Because what I'm going to say is not really... I don't have the quality to say what I'm going to say, but I understand that this is a very important principle anyway, so I'm staying in from a theoretical platform. And what allows us to understand what's happening to us and what Krishna's doing is humility. That's the key to actually everything. Because what is that quality of humility? That means we're ready to accept whatever Krishna gives us. And therefore, when it comes, we can see that it's coming from Krishna. If we're not humble or we have expectations, when it comes, we start to rationalize and we start to philosophize and we start to do so many other things. And then we get confused. But if we're humble, then we accept this is Krishna's arrangement. And it helps us to understand what's happening to us. And then from there, we can actually start to understand how we should respond to it. But humility actually allows us to open up to Krishna's mercy. When there's not that humility, we can't actually see that if actually everything's coming from Krishna. I think that's what Maharaj has been telling us. That is all, whatever's happening now, it's Krishna's arrangement. How we respond to that is based on our relationship with Krishna.
Very good. There are two more, and that's him tonight. Give me the hand in the back. Okay. Go ahead after you then. You okay?
I once listened to a lecture tape of one devotee, Govinda Das, who was a disciple of Kirtananda Maharaj. And in the lecture he was saying that his mother-in-law told his wife that it is very good idea she has decided to worship God.
Mm-hmm.
That she shouldn't have worshipped Krishna. Because because any time you try to worship that blue boy, it will take away all your happiness. And he was saying that it is true that many a times Krishna gives some sort of troubles to his devotees, even though in reality they are not troubles. But myself, I studied the pure devotees of Lord Krishna, and I see that all of them suffered. Even the parents of Krishna themselves, how they suffered. Krishna was with Devaki in the prison, yet he looked on, and she suffered. So it sometimes bewilders me that, am I to follow this Krishna? Because he's going to give me suffering, and I don't want suffering. So how best can we convince ourselves that Krishna will give us protection and not suffering?
But Bhakti Maharaj answered the question in this lecture that the whole thing is about exchanging love between the living entity and Krishna. So we have to come from where we are to a higher platform to continue that loving exchange. So sometimes we, giving up our attachments or going through some ordeal is actually purifying us so we can have a higher relationship of love with Krishna. That's what it's all about. When the cowherd boys were with Krishna on the banks of the Jamuna, they drank the water and they died. And Krishna glanced over them out of his compassion and he revived them. So they were with Krishna, but actually they lost their life because of Krishna's love. He brought him back. But then when Krishna was dancing on the heads of Kali, a serpent, he was caught in the coils of Kali. And all the cowherd boys, gopis, Mother Yasoda, they were in total anxiety. They were about ready to leave their body because they saw the object of their love was about to be taken from their existence. And Krishna put him through that whole ordeal only to increase their love. That's all it was about. He remained in the Kali serpent's coils for 2 hours. And they were, Mother Yasoda just fainted. She just couldn't see what was happening to her, an object of love, Krishna. So Krishna is doing that. He's bringing us to a higher platform simply for an exchange of love because we're so, you know, we're on wherever we are. We still have our attachments. So what appears to be suffering is not. It's just getting rid of the attachments. That's all. There's no suffering. If you're willing to exchange love for with Krishna, there's no suffering.
Let's change the word from suffering to adventure. So the what we sometimes may call suffering, unexpected adventure. It's frightening sometimes, yes, because it's unexpected. It's adventurous. We don't know exactly, you know, why and sometimes how or when. But life is nice with adventure. And life is very sad and very dull without adventure. Another way of looking at it, someone says, oh, that pain, but it feels so good. In the sense that no pain, no gain, or in the sense that from pain comes maturity, comes realization, comes intensity, comes growth and unfoldment. Now we may ask, why is that an integral part of material life? Even spiritual life, because, you know, with Vipa Lumba, there's different aspects of Vipa Lumba or separation, affection and love and separation. And there's a certain pain that's there. But it's not a normal pain. It's an anxiety with anticipation and later fulfillment. So whether we are in a material body or a spiritual body, whether in the material world or spiritual world, there is adventure, there is anxiety, and there is anticipation. So we can have that adventure and we can call it suffering because we're not in control and we miss the chance to enjoy the adventure. But if we control the adventure, it's not the same. Part of the beauty of adventure is that it's some question of the unknown or anticipation. Now we know the person taking us for the adventurous ride is our well-wisher. And even though there may be some fear, and some even sometimes some intimidation, we have a sense of well-being in the back of our mind, knowing that it's going to be okay, it's going to be beautiful at the end. When the one taking us for that adventure is not our well-wisher, we don't think of the person as our well-wisher, then we are considering that whatever we're experiencing is going to end in disaster. What you're really dealing with is how much you accept the adventure that Krishna takes us all on at different times. If he's really our well-wisher. And that's the science of bhakti. That we're not praying to the demigods for a particular boon. We're not engaged in preparing for the heavenly kingdoms, or we engage in trying to go and join, you know, Lord Narayan, where we have the same opulences as the Lord, a certain amount of awe and reverence. But we're trying to prepare ourselves to participate with the lawless Lord, where there's lawless love that goes beyond all etiquettes, because it's super etiquette, super excellent. But it's adventure with faith that ends in romance, and now chance for greater adventure. You can see in your question, in your statement, which we all reflect on from time to time, you can see why Krishna consciousness is rather difficult. And we see why Radharani says even if another gopi wants to be with Krishna, she will go and secure that gopi and bring her to Krishna, and that her pain in doing that will become her joy. It's not insane, materially insane. It's definitely divya mata. It's no, spiritually insanity, that you bring on some pain, something that brings you pain, that then turns into ecstasy for you. It's a madness. But it's that part of the adventure, because all parties considering that the beloved is there for them, and ultimate decisions are the best for all. And so therefore, the gopis and Srimati Radharani, who seems to have an arrogance, is not because she's thinking of herself. She's fixed that she can do the best service in taking care of Krishna's needs. So therefore, she wants to do it because she feels she can take care of Krishna's needs better. But even though she's fixed in that way, but if somehow Krishna feels that some other gopi can take care of her needs better, then even though that will give her pain, that she's not being able to take care of Krishna's needs better, but she's ready to do that, and will be happy knowing that Krishna's need is being taken care of even better than what she can do. Pain that she couldn't do it to the degree to be satisfied, but happiness in that sense. Again, taking ourselves as the ultimate enjoyers and receivers, having the sufficient faith to go on the adventure and know that where Krishna leads us and brings closure, that that's the best. And that's why we see many people are not able to consistently pursue, you know, the path of bhakti. And that's one of the reasons you see, you look at the pastimes of the acharyas, you see that they undergo more challenges than we can ever imagine. When Prabhupada took sannyasa, he was gored by a bull. Doesn't make any sense from a rational perspective. When he was coming here to do his major work, he had heart attacks. Some of you have maybe rode on a boat a few times. You know what it's like getting seasick on a boat, and being in a boat, and being elderly, and having a heart attack, and not knowing where you're going to end up and what it's going to be like. But like he was going, there's going to be a family, you know, of biological relatives, family of disciples, politicians, well-wishers, who were just saying, oh, we've been waiting for you. Come now, you can be with us, you can enjoy with us, you can be comfortable. A very uncomfortable, precarious situation, going into another precarious situation at the age, you know, that he was at. But it's ready to go for that adventure, take that kind of risk. Then Krishna becomes purchased. He becomes bound. Because if one is all for him, then he's all for them. That's all we're really doing in devotional service, really. We're just trying to one day to become all for Krishna, so he's all for us. He's going to keep sending different arrangements to try to help us to become all for him, how many lifetimes it may take us. And then once we are all for him, he's all for us. We can speed it up by asking him, help us to become all for him. force us to become offerings, then we're asking even more for adventure that may be what you call suffering. We're asking for the adventure to speed up. So if we're really accepting that the one who's taking us on the adventure has a loving surprise for us, then we are, yes, excited. We're anxious, but we're anticipating the closure with a great sense of confidence. His confounded charge, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sirvavadji, C.C. Radha Damodar, Radha Kalachandi, Gorni, Tai Vaishnava Korgi. Hare Krishna.